With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Registration prices for the 49th annual CAPCA conference have officially gone up. The CAPCA conference and Agri Expo will be held at the Grand Sierra Resort in Reno, Nevada on October 15th through the 17th. This year's show focuses on the industry's agriculture technology. You'll check out exhibits from drones to soil mapping. You'll also get an opportunity to sit in on some seminars and earn some CE credits. To learn more and to register, you can visit CAPCA.com. And now let's get into today's show headlines. Agriculture groups send letters to presidential candidates on boosting trade. Major U.S. agricultural organizations sent letters to all 2024 presidential candidates asking them to prioritize trade. The letters encourage each candidate to prioritize new market access trade agreements to help strengthen U.S. ag and decrease a reliance on China. Brian Keel, executive director of Farmers for Free Trade, shares what he thinks makes trade agreements a political hot potato.
I think there is a perception that trade can outsource manufacturing jobs. That's the big concern, is that our steel industry or our textiles went overseas and people blame that on trade agreements. I would argue, number one, a lot of job loss in those industries has been through efficiency. You've had automation, and that certainly led to a lot of job loss. And number two, I think we've learned how to do trade agreements better in the past decade. You look at U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement negotiated by President Trump, passed by the Congress with broad bipartisan support. It has very strong labor provisions in it to make sure we're not losing jobs as we trade.
Keel says his group wants to see America take the USMCA template and try to open up some new markets. More than 95% of the world's consumers live outside of the U.S., and 20% of U.S. farm revenue comes from exports. NAFB contributed to that report. And now here's AgNet West Brian German with more agriculture news.
The California Fresh Food Association is monitoring several specialty crop issues in Congress. CFFA Director of Government and Public Policy Adam Borchard said the association remains engaged on industry issues, with lawmakers set to return to Congress after Labor Day.
Congress is going to be working on appropriation for USDA as well as reauthorization on the Farm Bill. CFFA is a member of the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance, and we have been very active in various initiatives to promote the specialty crop industry, notably in working with Congressman Valadao's office on H.R. 5061, which is the Specialty Crop Domestic Promotion Program Act, and H.R. 5062, the Specialty Crop Mechanization Assistance Act. And both of those measures have bipartisan support among California's congressional delegation and across the U.S.
Traps monitored by state and county ag officials show that glassy-winged sharpshooter populations continue to be lower than last year. Treatments are underway in four counties to combat existing GWS infestations. 163 properties in the Reedley area and 62 properties in the Sanger area of Fresno County have been treated, with more treatments scheduled in the area of Fowler. So far this year, 390 properties have also been treated in the Madera Ranchos area. In Solano County, 780 properties have been treated, with just under 3,000 biological control agents being released. One adult GWS has been found this year, and the county continues to monitor over 200 traps and conduct spot surveys in and around fine sites and untreated properties. 679 properties in the Tulare area and 264 properties in the Exeter area have also been treated so far through the end of July. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
GMOs? Genetically engineered? Bioengineered? What's what? Well, GMO stands for genetically modified organism. It's the common term many people use for foods created through a process scientists call genetic engineering. And you'll start seeing bioengineered on some food packages. To let you know the product, or some of its ingredients come from GMOs. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, the EPA amends its controversial ROTUS rule. The Environmental Protection Agency says in order to conform to the Supreme Court's ruling in the Sackett versus EPA case, it and the U.S. Department of the Army are amending the 2023 definition of waters of the United States. EPA Administrator Michael Regan says, EPA and the Army have an obligation to apply this decision alongside the state co-regulators, tribes, and partners. While EPA and Army's 2023 rule defining waters of the United States was not directly before the Supreme Court, the decision in the Sackett case made it clear that certain aspects of the 2023 rule are invalid. National Cattlemen's Beef Association Chief Counsel Mary Thomas Hart says the cattle industry, quote, breathed a sigh of relief when the Supreme Court curtailed the EPA's overreach under the Clean Water Act. She says the revised WOTUS definition is an important step toward bringing the EPA more in line with the Supreme Court's ruling. I spoke with Mary Thomas Hart just a few hours after that EPA announcement came out. Here is our conversation. Have you had a chance yet to look and see what this revision is that they're talking about and what it could mean?
We have had a chance to give it an initial review, but are obviously taking some time to do a bit more detailed consideration of the new rule and what its impact is going to be. But just in summary, today the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers issued a final rule amending the 2023 definition of waters of the United States to conform with the Supreme Court's May 2023 decision in Sackett versus EPA. So if your listeners remember, the Sackett decision basically found that the significant nexus test was illegal not only under the Clean Water Act, but also the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. And so the agencies have rewritten that rule, excluding any reference to the significant nexus definition, but also, I think, you know, in response to that, limiting the categories of waters that are jurisdictional under the Clean Water Act.
So then for our listeners, what could this mean for them on their farms and ranches?
Sure. There are, I would say, three real practical changes that came from today's rule to the definition that was issued earlier today. So interstate wetlands are no longer considered jurisdictional waters. The rule limits jurisdictional tributaries to features that are relatively permanent, standing, or continuously flowing bodies of water, and redefines the term adjacent to mean having a continuous surface connection. So it does narrow the number of features across the country that are going to be subject to federal Clean Water Act permitting, either from EPA or the Army Corps of Engineers. You know, think isolated ponds on a ranch. Because those are isolated, those are likely no longer jurisdictional. Ephemeral features on operations are also likely not jurisdictional anymore. And we were able to retain some of those really important agricultural exclusions for features like prior converted cropland. So overall, obviously still doing a more detailed read, but I think that producers across the country and all landowners should be happy with the rule that we got from EPA today.
So overall, would you say that this is at least a bit of a win for farmers and ranchers?
Yeah, I think honestly, you know, it all stems back to that decision that we got from the Supreme Court earlier this year, which was an absolutely, I can't overstate how big of a win that was. It was a massive win for farmers, ranchers, and really all landowners and regulated stakeholders.
For more on this, you can head to our website at agnetwest.com. That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, the U.S. Meat Export Federation recently brought meat importers from Mexico and Central and South America to the U.S. to discuss the advantages of U.S. beef and pork. With more on that, here's Joe Sheely.
With support from the National Corn Growers Association, the U.S. Meat Export Federation brought meat importers from Mexico and Central and South America to the University of Nebraska-Lincoln for an educational seminar on the attributes and advantages of U.S. beef and pork. Sebastian Gray, USMEF program coordinator in Chile, accompanied a team of importers from his market.
Thank you to the National Corn Growers Association. This seminar has been great. The work the people here at the University of Nebraska have done is amazing. For my team, coming from Chile, we have people from the food service industry, from the retail industry, and each one of them came with different objectives. And the idea of just bringing them here, work with the meat, work with people who know what they're doing and love what they do, it's going to make a whole difference. They're going to understand the importance of having a great raw material. It is pork or is it U.S. beef? That's one of the most important things that I wanted to show them over here. Just hands-on, go crazy on it, have fun, and you're going to have people that are going to be inspired by a good product.
Following the seminar, a tour of retail outlets highlighted pork and beef merchandising techniques. USMEF Technical Programs Manager Paige Parker has more details.
While they were able to learn about how to work with the cuts at the processing seminar, the real key is how do we actually merchandise it and use these products in our everyday operations. And so first we went to Fairway, where it really is more of a boutique style shop. And then now we're at Hy-Vee, so they get to see a larger chain store.
Importers also got a firsthand look at cattle feeding practices at Champion Feeders near Meade, Nebraska, and toured the Holstone Farms pork plant near Fremont.
The U.S. has an awesome production system where we are grain-fed, and the feedlot system is just not something we see in other countries. And so being able to tour our production system and what's going to create this high-quality beef is a great opportunity. We're going to tour a pork plant as well, and these attendees get a firsthand look at how we actually process our pork products and what steps go into it to actually get to the end user.
For more, please visit usmef.org. For the U.S. Meat Export Federation, I'm Joe Sheely.
Thanks, Joe. And World Dairy Expo wants dairy producers to know that they're hosting a dairy symposium featuring the dairy business innovation initiatives from across the country. It'll be held Tuesday, October 3rd. Registration is open for this event. Now, the DBI initiatives were established during the 2018 Farm Bill. The four regional DBI initiatives provide direct technical assistance and sub-awards to dairy businesses to develop, produce, market, and distribute dairy products. Now, this symposium at World Dairy Expo will include a presentation by each of the initiatives about their regional efforts. The symposium will feature a panel that includes a representative from each of those initiatives. Now, the symposium is free to attend with a paid admission to World Dairy Expo. Learn more at worlddairyexpo.com. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Irrigation in arid California is as complicated as it is essential. Unpredictable supplies, uneven distribution, complicated application schedules, and regulation make it a challenge. No wonder help with water is the biggest request at USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service. Since 2014, NRCS has invested over $100 million helping over 1,000 California farmers conserve water. By using superior technology and savvy management, farmers get more crops with fewer drops. Join the Water Savings Club. Contact your local NRCS office. NRCS, helping people help the land since 1935.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
More detailed data on our increasing waistlines. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. Regional obesity rates grew further apart during the COVID-19 pandemic. From 2019 to March of 2020, adult obesity rates ranged from a low of 36.7% in the West to the highest rate at 43.1% in the South. The regional differences expanded during the first year of the pandemic, from a low of 37.4% in the Northeast to a high of 44.6% in the Midwest. The West had the lowest adult obesity rate before the pandemic, but experienced the largest increase of any region during that first year. The obesity rate increase in the West was nearly twice that in the South, which had the highest regional obesity rate before the pandemic. The Midwest had the second highest rate before the pandemic, but increased nearly twice as much as the South, emerging as the region with the highest obesity rate as of March of 2021. I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCullough. A family farm or ranch is a great workplace, and you are the recipient and steward of a legacy that may stretch for generations. It can be the best job in the world, but working with family can create a business culture that might threaten the effective functioning of the whole operation. Working on the family farm or ranch can be a rewarding experience, but there are some dynamics that have the potential to imperil the business. For example, family members can't be fired, at least not very easily. That's because family and business are intertwined. This can be a problem if the family member should be moved along to something else. Also, family members aren't typically paid market wages, but it's always best to have a market-oriented philosophy. Family members also usually don't get feedback. This often means that the family member doesn't know where they stand, what they're doing well, and what could be done better. This can cause tension in relationships because there was little to no feedback about missed expectations over time. To be a great family farming or ranching operation, make sure to adopt practices that are common to non-family businesses. That will help ensure the future viability of your family's enterprise while at the same time allowing you to keep the benefits of working in agriculture with those that you love. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCullough.
How might U.S. Forest Service pathologist Martin McKenzie be described? This California-based researcher is recognized as and acknowledges titles like Professional Observer.
Anybody else standing here would probably look at this stand and see the beautiful ponderosa and the wonderful incense cedar, but I see a dead spire in the distance.
Tree doctor. Specializing in
the study of diseases that either kill trees or produce warts or galls or cankers.
And perhaps most descriptive,
I'm a stump buster because the fungus grows inside the cave of the stump. So you've got to break open the stump to find the fungus inside.
All these names summarize McKenzie's talents and training over a 55-year career. To identify dead and dying trees in a 5-forest region in the Golden State and recognize various threats to trees, such as plant disease and fungus.
The two major diseases are root rots, vionosis, and blister rust.
Or in the case of a sugar pine tree in the Stanislaw National Forest.
The spores landed on the needle, grew down the needle, grew into the branch, grew into the main stem, and girdled the main stem. No water will get past the girdle, and everything above that will die. All the cones that were produced at the tips of the branches will die too, so there will be no seeds produced. It will eventually sterilize this tree, threatening the future of sugar pines.
He is also observant when it comes to identifying various invasive pests. Peeling away a dying stump, he notices bark beetles, which are both beneficial in eating away dying or decaying trees and threatening in consuming wood on healthy trees, causing significant damage.
This is mass attack. That's 200, 400, 600, 800, 1,000, 1,200 eggs in under 8 inches. That's an incredibly large number of eggs that hatch and grow out as little ones.
The significance when identifying tree disease and insect threats is also noting where potential wildfire threats could occur.
When these trees die and fall on the ground, they become 1,000-hour fuels, and they'll burn for 1,000 hours when they catch fire. But once you've got dense vegetation in taller trees and low vegetation underneath, it can crown fire, and that's what's the most dangerous. That's what we lose the greatest number of trees.
And how did McKenzie develop his powers of observation? Practice. Taking one area of forest at a time and spending time seeing and creating his mental picture of what a normal forest looks like versus one that has signs of unhealthy trees and vegetation. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water. Your air.
your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
Ag Secretary Vilsack headlines day two of the Farm Progress Show in Decatur. I'm Mark Oppold with the bottom line report brought to you by Helena. Secretary Vilsack visited the Farm Progress Show last year in Boone, Iowa, and has returned to the show here in Decatur, announcing more investments to small communities and individual producers making energy improvements in their towns or individual operations. He also has scheduled a listening session to gather input toward helping other energy-related issues. Grain producers may have a lot of questions about input expenses, interest rates, and the like, and the current volatility in the futures market. We'll see if December corn can hold that 488-490 level here today. November soybeans, 1388-1390. This is the bottom line report. Helena says improve your fertilizer efficiency and increase your yield potential for next season right now. Visit HelenaAgra.com to learn more. Superior Livestock recent Bighorn Classic offered over 220,000 calves, yearlings, and breadstock came from 32 states, so a great representation nationwide. Prices were pretty steady, although weaker for weaned calves and calves on cows. That's our bottom line. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
Good day, everybody. Albert J. Hernandez, the Untamed Chef for AgNet West. Welcome to the California Kitchen, where you can learn how to cook from an award-winning chef in under 3 minutes or less. I'm your host with the most. Let's get untamed. And we are here today in Fresno River Park. And this is going to be really cool. We're here for the 30th anniversary screening of Jurassic Park. So I am super excited. I got my family with me. But like always, we got to take care of a little bit of culinary business. And that is our recipe today. Here is my recipe for the perfect Kalmerna fig salad. So very first thing we need to do, these figs are so full of beauty and flavor already. We don't need to do much to these at all, but slice them in half. But what are we going to accompany those figs with? What I like to do is take my figs, cut them in half, and I like to hit them with a little bit of just regular oil, salt, pepper, and a drizzle of local honey. So fantastic. But what pairs so good with a beautiful fig is a nice little spring mix. But I take my spring mix, I bunch it together so we could do a nice chiffonade, which is a thin julienne slice of our bunched up greens. And this is so important because we want those flavors to really, really pop. Sitting on that will be a beautiful bed of whipped burrata mozzarella cheese. Now, I make my own burrata cheese. It's very, very easy if you've done it as many times as I have, but if you haven't, we could get a lot of really good burrata cheese from your Sprouts or your Whole Foods. And all I do is I season it with salt and pepper, hit it with just a little bit of lemon juice, oil, and I literally blend it until it starts to crumble apart and really turn into this beautiful whipped burrata. But the flavors are unbelievable. If you want to hit this with a nice balsamic, you can, but it's not necessary because the beauty of those figs is second to none, one of the greatest things you will ever eat. I like to let the figs at room temperature, but I want the rest of this salad to be cold, and even the bowl or the plate that you're going to put this on should be nice and cold or chilled. That way it just adds to the ambiance of such beautiful and great flavors that we're working with right here. Now remember, the simplicity of a great salad is just having great products. So when it comes to the products you're going to use for this, spend a little bit more and you'll be a lot more happy. For this and many more, my untamed recipes, tips, tricks, and all things untamed, www.ajh.theuntamedchef.com. And as always, this is Albert J., the Untamed Chef for AgNet West.
Agricultural literacy. No matter how that term is defined, some, like North Carolina A&T University Sustainable Agriculture Professor Kathleen Leong, note declining rates of ag literacy, especially on the secondary school level in the context of where food comes from and how food is produced. So from that perspective,
focusing on helping young people or further develop teachers in the field, whether it's from K-12 or trade schools or community college, in all different ways that we need to further develop these teachers to become competent with skill sets that could help more people, young or old, to understand the domain of agriculture in our lives.
With the help of a recent $500,000 grant from the U.S. Department of Agriculture and its Agriculture and Food Research Initiative program, Leong and North Carolina A&T colleagues will develop a curriculum to teach teachers on how ag is connected to our everyday lives, no matter the class or subject matter.
Focusing on the K-12 school teachers plus community college and the technical center instructors, create hands-on experiential training opportunities to bring teachers across all subjects, not just the ones teaching agricultural related subjects. I want to bring all teachers who are interested in seeing different ways of building agriculture as a base or as a hands-on activities in their own curriculum in teaching history, mathematics, economics, food nutrition aspects, that there are all different ways that agriculture knowledge and the skill sets could be further developed in the K-14 level.
While the program is focused on teachers within the state of North Carolina, Leong says emphasis will be on inclusion of teachers from limited resource communities, as well as urban areas. She sees subjects ranging from composting to renewable energy via food waste being taught as part of this curriculum. Her efforts are one of 16 projects supported by National Institute of Food and Agriculture funding to increase the food and ag educational workforce. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. For today's interview segment, I'm tossing it right on over to our friend Chuck Zimmerman over at AgWire.com. Chuck talks with Dr. Jackie Applegate, the president of Bayer Crop Science for North America, all about Bayer and Kroger teaming up for their Take Care Now initiative. Let's take a listen.
I'm Jackie Applegate, and I am the president of the North American Bayer Crop Science Division.
Tell us a little bit about this thing called Take Care Now campaign that has just kind of kicked off with a media event here today, and how Bayer is involved in this.
Yeah, Take Care Now brings really great partners together. Bayer, Kroger, Feeding America, and the AgriSafe Network, and the Luke Bryan Tour. And from Bayer's perspective, our mission is health for all, hunger for none. Kroger's focus is on food as medicine. Feeding America is about basically helping people where there's food scarcity. And then the AgriSafe Network is also about helping people provide nurses where there is scarcity of healthcare access. So this entire program is focused on rural America, and you may ask why. 34 million people go to bed hungry. 9 million of them are children. farming is in the heart of America, but the highest density of food insecurity is in rural America. And we also know from farmers and from their families that also they don't have the doctors and nurses they need to take care of their own health care needs. So where better than Farm Progress Show to kick this off?
So how did this kind of come together? And is this taking a while, or is it just adding on to some things that maybe we're already doing?
Yeah, no. You know, Bayer is a company that's been working with Feeding America for over a decade. We have a strong business relationship also with the Luke Bryan Farm Tour, which is about, you know, here's to the farmer, which is also tied to our Feeding America. Also then, working with Kroger's, who's a very important customer of ours, and they also have been focused on rural America and working with food banks. So it's about bringing our resources together. Also as Bayer, we've been very focused for years on working with rural communities through our partnerships with FFA and 4-H. And Bayer's fund, the Bayer Fund, basically has provided since 2010 over $65 million. In donations to farmers that then put that back into rural communities in the area of health, education, working with fire stations and things.
So what are some of the ways that Bayer is helping in this campaign, in this program, to hopefully reach the goals that you want?
Yeah, so Bayer is one across the whole farming network because it's that agricultural fall tour. So all of our autumn activities, we will have very specificity events tomorrow at Farm Progress. We'll be providing information to farmers about health care access and pre-screening for cardiovascular disease, kidney disease, and prostate cancer, for one. Also, as part of the Luke Bryan Tour, where we're the major sponsor also with Kroger's and Feeding America, we'll be donating meals. And then our American Farmers Program is getting ready to kick off this fall, too. So it really ties together with all the things that we do every day.
So if people want to get involved, can they, and how would they get information?
Yeah. People can always get involved, and I say if you are made aware and you can step up and make a difference, please do. So basically what I would say is going out to our internet site at Bayer or at Kroger's, and also you can make donations to Feeding America, find out about the AgriSafe Network. The internet is a plethora of resources, so just go out there and type away and get involved.
All right, Jackie, thank you very much for visiting with me here, and great program that you guys are working together called Take Care Now Campaign. I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Unused prescription opioid pain medicines can spell trouble. They can spell risk if taken by someone they weren't prescribed for, harm if accidentally taken by a child or pet, or overdose if they're not used as directed. Safely dispose of opioids before they can hurt your family. Find a drug take-back option such as medicine drop boxes. You may find these in your community at local pharmacies or police stations. Visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. Farm Bureau Foodies helping to tell the story of farmers and ranchers. Anna Genasi, Director of Education and Communication at Stanislaus County Farm Bureau, is also the host of Farm Bureau Foodies. She goes on to explain more about the need for this outreach.
So not that anybody wants to talk about it, but during COVID, when we were, you know, as a Farm Bureau, we do host a lot of events. And so during that time, You know, obviously those normal gatherings weren't happening. The team here at Farm Bureau, we were sitting down and having lunch together and kind of talking through ways to keep people engaged during that kind of shutdown time. And what came out of that is this idea to highlight our members, our local farmers, ranchers, and dairymen by connecting them with the food that we eat, and specifically the food that's being featured at local restaurants. So what a great way to like give a shout out to restaurants who are sourcing locally, to chefs who, you know, see the value in sourcing local fresh commodities. And then obviously from a Farm Bureau perspective, telling that great story of our farmer, rancher, or dairyman, because it seems, in Anna's opinion, that it's an area that we don't, if we don't get out in front of it, other organizations, non-ag organizations, kind of fill in the dialogue that don't always paint the most positive picture of California agriculture. And so being able to tell the stories of our local members and kind of the awesome work that they're doing has just been such a blessing. So that's where it all started. We've actually successfully completed, we did kind of two pilot episodes, and then this year we're on track to do six episodes.
Stay tuned as we'll hear more about Farm Bureau Foodies coming up in later shows. But for right now, here's AgNet West Brian German with more Ag News.
The California Cattlemen's Association is currently accepting applications for its 2023 scholarship opportunities. Last year, CCA awarded over $59,000 in scholarships to students studying agriculture. Five different scholarship opportunities are being offered, and 2023 applications are being accepted through October 1st. Eligibility requirements include being a young, regular, or feeder member of CCA, and individuals must be studying a major consistent with career goals and should be planning a career associated with the beef cattle industry. Scholarship amounts and quantities vary year to year, and recipients of the CCA scholarship program can reapply the following year. By filling out the CCA standard scholarship application, individuals will be considered for any of the scholarship opportunities. More information about the scholarships is available at calcattleman.org/scholarships. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian. And a survey expands the focus of tech on farms. USDA's Computer Use of Farms report recently received a name change to reflect expanding technology use on farms. USDA's Rod Bain talks with Tony Dorn of the National Agriculture Statistics Service in this report.
A new name for an every other year released USDA report.
The technology use survey was previously called the Farm Computer Use and Ownership Survey.
Tony Dorn of the National Agricultural Statistics Service explains the reason behind the name change for the report.
Since the technology has evolved, right now we're collecting much more data rather than just computer usage on the farm and ownership. We're collecting all sorts of data about precision ag, about how farmers connect to the internet, and about how farmers use the internet for conducting business with USDA and outside of USDA.
The recently released 2023 edition of the Technology Use on Farms report builds upon data first obtained in 1997. And according to the survey,
85% of farms reported having access to the internet. And that compares with 82% in 2021.
With the New England region leading the nation with 98% of farms connected to the internet. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The EPA amends its controversial ROTUS rule. The Environmental Protection Agency says in order to conform to the Supreme Court's ruling in the Sackett versus EPA case, it and the U.S. Department of the Army are amending the 2023 definition of waters of the United States. EPA Administrator Michael Regan says EPA and the Army have an obligation to apply this decision alongside the state co-regulators, tribes, and partners. While EPA and Army's 2023 rule defining waters of the United States was not directly before the Supreme Court, the decision in the Sackett case made it clear that certain aspects of the 2023 rule are invalid. National Cattlemen's Beef Association Chief Counsel Mary Thomas Hart says the cattle industry, quote, breathed a sigh of relief when the Supreme Court curtailed the EPA's overreach under the Clean Water Act. She says the revised WOTUS definition is an important step toward bringing the EPA more in line with the Supreme Court's ruling. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Gas lower, diesel higher ahead of Labor Day weekend. For the first time in over a month, the nation's average price of gasoline declined, falling 4 cents from a week ago to $3.78 per gallon. The national average is up $5.08 from a month ago, but $3.05 per gallon lower than a year ago. The national average diesel price rose 3.3 cents in the last week, up to $4.33 per gallon. That's 70.7 cents lower than a year ago. However, Gas Buddies' Patrick DeHaan says, quote, "The drop may be short-lived as one of the nation's largest refineries partially shut last week after a fire at a shortage tank, and as we see more tropical activity that could lead to further disruption." After rallying for 7 straight weeks, oil prices have lost some of their luster, much of which can be blamed on continued weakness in China's economy and refinery issues in the U.S., limiting how much crude oil refineries will be able to process. California continues to remain the state with the highest average price for gas at $5.26 per gallon and diesel at $5.80 per gallon. If you're traveling this Labor Day weekend, visit GasBuddy.com for more fuel insights. NAFB contributed to that report. Reporting for AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Danielle Leal.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.